I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome back to another edition of the Friday Golf Podcast. I am your host, Andy Johnson. I am joined today, as always, by Joseph LaMagna. We are going to do a little stock up, stock down for PGA Tour players. But before we get to that, or not PGA Tour players, I guess, it's professional golfers. As this confusing time that we're in continues. But before we get to that, let's get to our weekly segment, In and Out. Joseph, what are you in on?
Well, I hope this doesn't step on the stocks up and stocks down, Andy, but I'm in on Brooks Koepka showing some flashes entering the PGA Championship. I think one of the best, you think about like what are the best potential duels, and Brooks, Scotty would be a super exciting final group or a couple guys to have in the mix at the PGA Championship. Brooks has won three of the last six PGAs, now wins in LIV Singapore, entering, you know, the PGA is only 2 weeks out. Whether or not that translates to success at the PGA, we'll see, but I think it's really exciting to have the best major champion of the past decade showing a little bit of form entering this major season. It's kind of a story that golf needs.
Yeah, I think with Brooks, it's always, he generally plays well when it leading into a major win. So seeing this just a couple weeks before the PGA, he is a PGA specialist. I mean, if he was able to get another one and go for the last seven, it'd be truly like a remarkable, remarkable run. I think in a way, and this probably, there's a couple factors that go into this, he doesn't win a lot outside of majors, but also now the fact that he plays on LIV all kind of adds to this. Is he's the greatest golfer that gets the least amount of chatter, and I think part of it's his personality too. I think like he doesn't give people a ton, and it doesn't seem like he wants to give people a lot of info or, you know, let them in. And then also, you know, he doesn't win all that much outside. Like he's we've never seen somebody win majors as prolifically as he has with so little other tournaments. So I think there's these factors that go into it, but yeah, if he was able to get to the sixth major or fifth major, you know, six. Or six major, six,
yeah,
major.
Yeah.
Jeez. I was like, I, you know, six major. I mean, we're talking, you know, something special.
Totally. Yeah. It's fun to root for dynasties, right? Like not to take anything away from Brian Harman, but the Brian Harman win last year at the Open Championship, like that doesn't have a ton of juice, but I think Brooks adding a sixth would be an incredible story. So I'm excited to see what he can do at Valhalla. Andy, what are you in on?
All right, I'm in on Bandon Dunes, and a lot of people have talked about this. I just spent a weekend there for their 25th anniversary. It was really a cool event. Obviously, it made you sit and think about where golf was before Bandon Dunes, where it is now. I think it's had a seismic influence. I don't think that there's really any development in the last 25 years, including Sandhills. I think Sandhills is the one that you could point to and say, hey, maybe this is where Bandon kind of got the idea. But Bandon, I think there's something about Mike Kaiser being just a normal guy. You know, he had his greeting card company, and that him being able to do this, build this golf empire from not having a golf background has inspired so many other people to attempt to build golf. Beyond that, the type of golf has had a huge influence on the design industry. He really changed, along with Sandhills and the work of architects like Bill Coore, Tom Doak, Gil Hance, David McClay, like they have changed the way golf, you know, the trend of golf architecture. But I think like the thing when I was there this weekend that I thought about the most was just the impact that Bandon Dunes has had on the economy in the southern, on the southern coast of Oregon. And I think that's the one that probably gets talked about the least, but this was a struggling logging community. The logging industry obviously is not one that's been great, you know, over the last couple decades. And this was a, you know, an economy that didn't have a lot going on. And now you go there, and when you're on property, you just, I just can't believe, I mean, there's thousands of jobs that have been created by this resort. The housing market in Bandon is crazy. But you know, Mike Kaiser is doing things like buying up, you know, big swaths of housing that he's doing employee housing. He's building employee housing. Like it is just, it's remarkable. And I think it's a great story. Like, as golf comes in, you know, it comes in the crosshairs of the public a lot with municipal golf in cities and the land uses and everything. But Bandon Dunes is really a great story of what golf can bring economically to an area. And I think the Kaisers are doing a similar thing up in Sand Valley, in Rome and Nakusa, Wisconsin, a town that a down on the luck area because of, you know, the decline of the paper industry. It's a very similar story there, but it's just, I think that like the way that it's changed lives, in that area is kind of under talked about and really a cool aspect of the resort beyond all the great things it's done for golf. It has really lifted an area of the country that's really beautiful, remarkable that people didn't really know about, and now people know about how the beauty of the area, but also that town and community has benefited greatly from the golf that was, you know, the golf that's changed the golf industry. So that's what I'm in on. Joseph, you have anything on that?
No, I think that was well said. I haven't been to Bandon, would love to. I mean, was there anything you learned about Bandon from this time around? I know you've been there before, but was there anything that stood out to you never considered before? Maybe the economic impact is the answer.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that I kind of thought about. It's just how many lives have been changed, impacted from that. And it even goes to like the caddies. Like, you know, they have, I think they, when it's summer, they have like 400 caddies operating, but they have hundreds of full-time caddies. And you know, it's like the year-round play, I mean, the year-round aspect of the resort, it's sold out all year round. It's like, you know, it's just, I think like, I also like, you know, I guess like from an architecture standpoint, played Old Mac again, really enjoyed that. That's just like a delightful golf course. It's super fun. It's super wide. You know, it plays so different based off of all the whole locations. I also, you know, Pacific Dunes is amazing. I think like I think that's probably the biggest thing I walked away from everything. I love trails. I love the walk of trails. But Pacific Dunes is the one course there that, you know, I would consider playing over like a Royal County Down for a day, or a Royal Port Rush, or a, you know, the old course, or, you know, like Pacific Dunes is truly, truly one of the greatest golf courses in the world. And I was like, I've played it now, I think three times. And going around it again, I just like, I'm amazed at how great that golf course is. It is one of the greatest modern golf courses in the world. And I think, would I want to play it every day? No, I think it would wear me out. But, you know, that golf course is really spectacular and special. It has everything. The flow of the golf course is amazing. It makes you, like, one of the things I think that I like the most about it is it really makes you hit some shots. It makes you do some things that you don't want to do. And I think that across that resort, just in general with the retail golfer focus of the resort, there are a lot of holes that don't make you do what you don't want to do. There's places to bail out. I think in particular, the Bandon Dunes, the stretch of 11, 12, 13, 14. 12 is pretty friendly, but and even you could throw 15 and 16 in there. Like, you got to hit some golf shots. And if you hit the golf shots, you can score like crazy on the back nine. But if you don't, you're in for a world of hurt, and you're doing it right on the Pacific Ocean. It is, it's a great golf course.
Sweet. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a big lesson for me the last 2 years has been the importance of wind as a defense to the modern golfer, especially a good golfer. And you're talking about the fun of shot making. Wind being such a reliable defense at Bandon's, like, one of the main reasons I want to get out there. Like, that, obviously the views are another part of that, but it's pretty easy to hit a lot of stock shots on a lot of golf courses. But when there's a lot of wind, it's a reliable defense. So I think you talking about that makes me even more eager to get out there.
All right, what are you out on?
Andy, I'm curious your perspective on this. I don't know if you saw this. It's a ruling that happened on the DP World Tour this past weekend. Did you see
Probably
this?
I didn't see it. No.
So this is a report from Ryan French at MondayQ, mondayq.com. Yvonne Cantero is the golfer's name. So in his Thursday round, Andy, he hits a ball into a penalty area off the tee on a par five. He isn't sure if it's a penalty area or not, and so he hits a provisional. And apparently in that case, if you're not sure if it's a penalty area or not, you are allowed to hit a provisional.
Yeah. You're using the premise of it might be out of bounds or it might be a lost ball.
Correct.
Like, you always hit a provisional for a lost ball.
So he goes up. It is a penalty area. He calls a rules official, and the rules official tells him that he wasn't allowed to hit a provisional, which is not correct. So he asks for a second opinion. He's pretty insistent that he did what he's supposed to do. And the other rules official also says the same thing, that he wasn't supposed to hit a provisional. So he's then forced to play the provisional ball that he had hit, which is in the middle of the fairway, instead of taking a drop and playing it as a hazard, hits it on the green and makes a putt for five. After the round, they realize that it was a mistake on the rules official's part, and they subtract one from his score, which I have never seen done before. He would have had to go over, play the ball from the penalty area, or take a drop and still make a four. Like, he would have had to get it up and down from there to get the same score as subtracting one. But that's what the rules officials decided was the right course of action to correct the mistake under rule 20.2, that if a ruling is found to be wrong, the ruling can be corrected under the rules. It's a pretty ambiguous clause in the rule book, but that's the decision they went with. He ends up making the cut on the number. I've never seen anything like that, where they just go out and subtract one off a score. What do you think about that?
It's very strange. I mean, did it have a lot of weight on the tournament? Did he make the cut, miss the cut?
Made the cut on the number.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because of the subtraction.
It was his first round, but still he ended up making the cut on the number. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's a crazy, I've never seen that before where you subtract one from the score. And it's very unlikely that if he had played with a penalty shot,
yeah, he would have got up and down. Yeah.
It's kind of nuts. I'm out on that.
It's extremely weird. I don't understand how they came to that. The whole thing is strange. Like, how do they, like, I feel like that's a really common sense. Hey, if you presume the ball might be lost, you can play the provisional. And it sounds like that was what it was.
That's how it was reported. I mean, maybe the
I don't love this. I'd be out on this too.
Maybe the lesson here, Andy, is if you know the rules, don't call the rules official. Like, professional golfers call rules officials over every little thing. Is that the lesson? Like, hey, if you know the rule, just don't, why even call a rules official?
Yeah, I think that might be it. You got your playing partners, and you lock in and you don't need them. I had something funny happen to me when I played the US Mid-Am years ago, where I just had a regular routine cart path drop. And like, I was about to do it, and then this rules official rolled up on me. And all of a sudden, the drop took like 10 minutes. I mean, I was like in the process of taking the drop. Like it was a cart path. Like, you know how to drop from a cart path. I played golf my whole life. So this drop then like takes 10 minutes. And it was, they have these like timing holes. And it was on a timing hole. And we get to the next tee. And the guy that made me take 10 minutes to drop off this cart path, then like your group's out of position. Like we had been waiting on every shot. We have this drop, we fall behind, and it just like, it was just, you know, it had no bearing on really, like, you know, I don't think it had a bearing on anybody in our group, but we were just kind of like, wait, like we're now being monitored. Like you are the reason that we're out of position. Because he drove up and he was like, whoa, whoa.
So I don't think I'd want to be the rules official that tells Andy Johnson he's out of position after causing him to be out of position. I'll tell you that much.
It was just such a weird situation. I was playing well at that point in the tournament. So like I kind of just kept rolling. And like I'm usually not really worried about pace of play. But it was just this, like, I always think about that with rules officials and drops is like, you know, these things are not, this is not open heart surgery. And it seems to me that golf just gets way too in the weeds here and tactical. We need a little bit more autonomy. And with the rules of golf, I don't know what the answer is. I've gone back and forth. Like, part of me thinks that there should be just like with the money they're playing for, especially on the PGA Tour, there should just be a rules official in every group. And they take it all out of the players. Like if there's something there, they're already there. And it's like, just drop here. Or they even do the drop. Like maybe that's the way it should go. It's like, you know, like they just do the drop. It's not like, you know, when there's a foul or something in the NBA, the players, when it's a dead ball, the players don't get to just go like throw the ball in. The official hands them the ball to throw in, right? Every other sport's like this. Like there's no like, hey, like they set. So it's like if there's a drop situation, why doesn't the official just do it at this point? I think it's a little different when the economics of it go down. Like I think that makes sense maybe for the PGA Tour or major championships. I don't think it makes sense for every tour, but I don't know. The rules of golf, especially in the internet age, it's just these rules officials aren't perfect. I think like to become a rules official, you have to take a test. And I think like the passing grade's not like, it's not like you have to nail all the rules. Like, you know, like these guys don't know all the rules. It's a super hard thing to understand all the nuances of these rules.
I hear you. I mean, I guess you wouldn't even need a rules official with every group. You'd probably just need one on every hole. But I think, Andy, I'm too much of a sucker for rules controversies that I think I want the players to keep litigating where a ball crossed into the penalty hazard. I think I like it the way that it is. But what are you out on?
I'm out on the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson. I really struggled with this one more so than I think more so than any event on the calendar. This might be the worst event that the PGA Tour has ever put on in their history. The golf course is flat out awful. It was in terrible shape. They were sodding numerous fairways. I know like agronomy can be hard, but this golf course, then you think about like, oh, it's the CJ Cup. The CJ Cup started as like this wonderful event, bringing the PGA Tour to South Korea, a golf craze company or country, and somehow now we've muddled the Byron Nelson, an event that used to have like history, used to be a really good event when Byron Nelson was alive and players like honored Byron Nelson's life and career by going there, and the tour has somehow run this into the ground. It's become this just mediocre, not mediocre, downright bad event that's sponsored by it's the CJ Cup, which used to be a interesting fall event where we were taking a lot of the best players in the world to South Korea, a place that like when you talk about globalizing the game, becoming a world tour, is this like the whole combination of this was downright awful. Like, I can't get over how bad this was. I had zero interest. Zero. I cover golf for a living. I had no interest in putting on the TV to watch this weekend. I thought the leaderboard was bad. The field was bad. This shouldn't be a PGA Tour event. They shouldn't have events instead of putting this stuff on. And it's just, you know, I think, like, how does this event get better? It gets better if there's 20 players that are gone from the PGA Tour that are back on the PGA Tour playing in these events. Then all of a sudden the depth, like, you probably have some players that are notable names that are playing. You know, this is no offense to, like, Taylor Pendrith and Ben Coles and S.H. Kim, the players that were in the mix, but, like, I don't know. I struggled. I struggled with this event. I don't know how we go from that event to the event this week at Wells Fargo, where you have all the top players, to the PGA Championship, and say that this is the same product, because it's not. It's the NBA wouldn't call that the same product.
Yeah, we've talked about it a million times. I mean, these shouldn't be the same. This shouldn't get FedEx Cup points. And I know that's a different level, but this event shouldn't even get FedEx Cup points to begin with. I'd love to take a positive.
They should get a Masters exemption. That event should not get a Masters exemption. Nothing about winning, you know, about winning that event does anything for me. It doesn't make me think about Taylor Pendrith in any way differently.
No, I'd love to take a positive spin here. I had the same takeaway. I think if it's a bad field like this was, it's got to be on an interesting golf course or a funky golf course, something to give the viewer something to watch for. But we've seen TPC Craig Ranch, really bad golf course, not on at prime time. It's on in the middle of the day. Like, I think asking people's time away from family on a Sunday to watch that was a huge ask. And I think the numbers will show that most people just didn't.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing about it, is, like, it does make you think about just golf in general. I think this is where the PGA Tour really starts to struggle. Outside the majors, it's hard. You know, you're now into the time of the year where, like, May is when everybody's getting outside everywhere, right? It's great weather in places like Texas, where you are, in Florida. It's really nice out early May. Every part of the country is active and outdoors, and it becomes really hard to sit inside and commit to golf coverage at this time of year. It makes me think, like, when we're in this period, who knows what's going on with the board and the deals? It seems awfully quiet and awfully. It seems like they're at a logjam where they're just not going anywhere. But when you talk about, they've said, oh, now it's time to address the product. This is where the product needs to be addressed. Like, what are we doing at this time of year? Could we get coverage, like, that ends at 8 p.m.? Like, I think that gives golf a better shot if you could get it later in the day. I just don't think that it's realistic, especially with the way the world's evolving, parenting's changing. I don't think it's realistic to ask people week in, week out to commit to, like, midday coverage on the weekend. The world's kind of changing. The roles of parents are changing. And if you want the sport to be younger, if you want the sport to evolve, if you want the product to improve, you have to look at, like, when you're putting this stuff on TV and who's playing in it, what you're putting out there. And I think this was the worst event the PGA Tour has ever put on.
For me, it's always this and the Mexico Open are, like, kind of a toss-up, because Vidanta Villarta has about as much intrigue as TPC Craig Ranch. But I agree with you, Andy. Would echo all that. I also think when you're talking about the world changing, volunteers have been a huge part of the PGA Tour's business model. And so I think that's the case for why they've done a lot of events the way that they've done them. Also, I think players... where I want to go with this, and maybe it's a broader discussion, but players don't need to play as many practice rounds as they did 20 years ago. So I think in general, there should be more freedom to experiment with different formats. Maybe not every event is Thursday to Sunday, 72 holes stroke play. Like, The golfers don't need to be there all week. It happening in the middle of the day, I agree with all of that, and I think there should be some more experimentation. This did not work.
Let's get to our stock up, stock down. Before we get there, let's talk about Club Champion. Club Champion, I was at Bandon. You know, you fight weather there. The last time I was at Bandon, I played with my old retro irons, my blades. And I got to tell you something. Having my new irons, my Club Champion irons, it gave me like a little bit of heavier ball cutting through the wind. I had a little bit more, you know, I didn't, my ball wasn't launching and with as much spin and height. And it really helped me on a few occasions, like flight the ball down. And this is the type of stuff you get when you go to Club Champion, is you're going to get your set fully optimized. And it's going to, like, in particular, I think, help you the most when conditions are tough. That's when you want to have really that full control and that perfectly optimized flight on your ball. So how they do this is they give you tour level fitting. They have these all over the country. There's 120 plus studios nationwide. So if you're anywhere near a major metro area, you can go visit one of these places. And they have 65,000 hittable head and shaft combinations. I think, like, this is the thing that does it for me, is like, I'm like very much a pro brand agnostic, because like, you want to find what's going to work the best for you, no matter what it is in life. And here you get to go try out everything and find what's best for you. And I'm always like, every time I've done one of these, I've gone in wanting, you know, one set of clubs, and I usually walk out with the other one. And it's very clear to me that this was the right set of clubs. So if you use the promo code FRIEDEGG, all caps, you get $100 full bag fitting or $50 off any other fitting with a club purchase. So that's the promo code FRIEDEGG. Go to Club Champion, check out their website. You can book it on there. And yeah, so thanks. Let's get back to stock up, stock down. I guess, like, yeah, we're, you know what's crazy is we're going to blink and this PGA Tour season's going to be over. I was like already like kind of charting out my weeks and travel and stuff. And I was like, holy shit, we're going to be at the US Open in no time. So I think it's like a great point of the season to do this, because there aren't a lot of weeks. There aren't a lot of tournaments to turn around a mediocre year, a poor year, a great year, you know? So let's start. Who's your first stock up, stock down candidate?
Yeah. This is an obvious one, but I think we have to talk about him. I think the player that's changed their stock more than anybody else.
My first one.
Yeah, you have to talk about Scottie Scheffler, right? This time last year, it was bouncing around who's the best golfer in the world. People were making cases for Rahm, especially after he won the Masters. You could have made an argument for Rory at stretches of last year. Obviously,
Brooks,
you could have
made after the PGA.
Right. You could have made a case for Scottie. And then last fall, you could have made a case for Victor Hovland. Now there's not any case to be made besides Scottie Scheffler. Four wins in his last five starts. The only other one was a runner-up. Now adds a second major championship at winning at the Masters. I think the difference between having one major to your name and two is quite significant. Clearly the best player in the world.
I think the other thing's the two players is like... You know, you say two majors, and I think I'm fully on board with Garrett's take of players should be half majors. And it's like Scottie Scheffler is like the case in point of this. Two majors, doesn't feel like Scottie's won only two majors.
I think the problem with retroactively, I know it's been done before, but I think when you retroactively make something a major, like there wasn't.
We're not making it a major. It's just like if you're counting, it's just like. Think about, go through the names and add half majors to players.
I understand the take. I just think giving Scottie a major when you weren't playing with like major championship, knowing it was a major championship or half a major championship. I don't know if I'm fully can get behind that, but I agree. I mean, it's a much more significant event than winning the CJ Cup. But yeah, I think Scottie's the player who's changed his stock the most this year. Now it's just not even, he's one of the strongest favorites in these upcoming majors that we've seen in recent years. I think the chances he wins the PGA or especially wins Pinehurst. I mean, Andy, I was thinking about that. If there's not a ton of wind at Pinehurst, he's winning that event, right? Like, Can you picture him not being in the top five or six names in that event? I can't. I mean, there's a lot of variance in golf, but that's a good setup for him.
I just think the level at which his ball striking's at, it's hard to imagine. I mean, we saw him last year putting horrendously, like very poorly. And he still was like top five, like all the time. You know, he went on a run. He went so many weeks without finishing outside the top 10, and he was putting very below average. So you think about the only way we get to a point where Scotty maybe has a downturn is something with the golf swing. And right now it feels like that's not really feasible. And I think, like, I've talked about this a little bit, but I think it goes back to his approach. Like, his fundamentals, just the maniacal focus on fundamentals, I think prohibits the swing from getting in a bad place. Like, he's not a tinkerer. I don't think he's going to be a guy that we see this so often. We get players to the top of the game. They get to their peak of their level of play ever, and then they decide they need to make a change, and they need to try and do something else to get to the next level. I don't think Scotty is going to do that. I think he understands what's getting him here, and he's just continuing on the path. And I think that, like, God, like, I wish, you know, it's like something I've just thought about with Scheffler, is like, I wish I could go back to when I was 17 and just apply what I've watched Scheffler do, where it's just like, all he does every time he goes out to play a round of golf is he starts with fundamental check. And it's like, okay, if my fundamentals are locked in, if I set up to the ball the right way, there's only so many things that can go wrong. And I just think that, to me, is like what I believe in most about Scotty Scheffler, is that I just don't see a big dip coming. But that being said, golf is very fickle, and this could change, and all of a sudden he could get something like, you know, the driver, as soon as you hit a couple squirrely, you can get in a bad mental place with a driver. But I don't know. It just seems very far away for Scotty. It looks really easy everywhere, but I think the greens is still a work. But he kind of has that Zalatoris thing going, where you feel like 15 feet away, you're like, oh my God, this is probably going to go in. You're the only ones you're really worried about are like the 4 to 8 footers,
right? And if he ball strikes well enough, he can give himself a little bit of a cushion to miss a 4 footer, a 5 footer here and there. So no, I agree. I think the other thing with Scotty that kind of hits on the not tinkering, he doesn't react to like short term, you know, oh, I hit my wedges badly this week, so now I'm going to overhaul my swing and try to figure out my wedges. Like, he's always verbalized that he understands it's about the long term. He's not going to overreact to some short term bad putting. I agree. It doesn't feel like it's going anywhere, but maybe an injury is the biggest thing that could derail him, and then the neck flaring up or something and him having to adapt his swing to it. But I don't see a world in which he doesn't, at least isn't in the mix in one more major this year.
All right. Parlaying off this, I have for stock down Rory and John Rahm.
Okay.
I just think that, you know, when we look at this year, for the last 2-3 years, and I think for Rory for like most of his career, he's lived in this world where it's like, yeah, I'm probably the best golfer in the world, or at least there's an argument. There's no clear best golfer in the world. And this year for John Rahm and Rory McIlroy, John Rahm went to LIV. He has not won on LIV after winning quite a bit last year on the PGA Tour. I think 72 holes helps better players separate. I think that it's not a coincidence that he hasn't won on a 54-hole circuit. A lot of times you need that last 18 if you're a really great player that's what, you know, kind of pushes you over the edge. More time, more golf is always going to, longer term is always going to favor better players. But anyways, Rory and John Rahm could win, I think, the next major, and there's not a discussion about if they're the best player in the world. I think they could almost win 2 of the next 3 majors with what Scotty's done. If Scotty's in contention, I don't think that then there is a discussion of who the best player in the world is. And I think that's like a crazy thing. Like Scottie's opened up this whole thing and they're stock down. They haven't played, neither of them played great this year. I mean, I say that and Rory's got a, you know, the team win, which, you know, you can put whatever salt you want on it.
That doesn't count.
I don't really count it that much. And he's got the Dubai win. But the reality is these two guys, that a lot of their identity as players have been, I am the best player in the world. You have to imagine that they've believed for a very long time they are the best player in the world. And I don't think either of them could look in the mirror and say, I am the best golfer in the world right now. And I think that's kind of like a crazy thing for, you know, sublime, supreme talents like these two players.
Yeah, I only listed two stocks up and stocks down for each of these. I didn't have Rory, but I did have Rahm as my second biggest stock down. He hasn't finished outside the top 10 on LIV. So, I mean, it's not like it's been a disaster, but he's just been irrelevant. The T45 that he finished at the Masters is his worst finish at a Masters through 8 starts now in his career. He just hasn't done anything to enter the public consciousness, really, of where his golf game is. So I agree with you. It's an interesting point. If they were to win a major, let's say either of them were to win the PGA, would any of them have a claim to being the best golfer in the world, either Rory or Rahm? I don't think so. Yeah, it's.
I think Scottie could like miss the cut and it wouldn't matter. It's insane. It's absolutely crazy. I think like if you think 2 months ago, how we would do this, what we would be saying. I don't think it was like really a fathomable thing to say that without a doubt, like we haven't been here in a really long time where it's very, 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 very undeniably clear who the best player in the world is.
Yeah. I mean, this time last year, Jon Rahm had won 4 times, including the Masters.
And it was like, is he the best player in the world?
Completely different spot this time around. He's been, largely irrelevant. So I agree. I think his stock hasn't gone as far down as maybe some other players. Do you want me to get to my biggest stock down?
Yeah.
My biggest stock down, and maybe this is giving you flowers, Andy, and not, I don't want to step on your take too much, but I think Jordan Spieth has the biggest stock down of any player in professional golf this year. He is now outside the top 20 in the official world golf rankings for the first time since July of 2021. He hasn't been relevant in a major since July of 2021, the Open Championship at Royal St. George's. Spieth finished T4 last year at the Masters, but it wasn't really competitive. He hasn't been in the mix at too many big golf tournaments. I mean, there's been a PGA Tour event here and there, but Jordan's 46th in the FedEx Cup standings, Andy. We're not, you know, if a couple months don't go his way, he could be outside the top 50 and not exempt into signature events. He could also fall out of the top 30 in the official world golf rankings, which is another pathway into the signature events. Like, we're a couple months away from Jordan Spieth needing sponsor exemptions to get into the biggest events on the PGA Tour, which, to be clear, he would get all the sponsor exemptions he wants. But
I think that's clear with what Webb Simpson's been going through, that he's gonna get those spots.
Absolutely. But Jordan Spieth isn't young anymore, and he's gone through a 30 dip in his career. So, yeah, I think your take that he's just a guy has aged magnificently, and it's hard to think about him as a top 15, 20 player in the world right now. He just missed the cut at Craig Ranch.
Yeah, I think like outside of the Masters, I think like the one thing that's going to, that gives Spieth hope and fans of Spieth hope is two of the majors every year are going to fit his skill set pretty well with the Open and the Masters, right? Those are golf courses that he can play around. But like for the other two, I mean, like the PGA and the US Open, I mean, he's pretty far down my list of like players that are going to thrive. And I think it's just, I think this is what like Ricky Fowler went through this. Ricky, this is the world of golf that we're in, is that if you're not super long or like supreme ball striking, or like if you're not just like a supremely talented ball striker, you are going to be replaced by the younger generation. Ricky Fowler had this happen in his career. He went from, you know, I think Ricky, when he came out, he was a long player. He was an above average length. And when you become average, that becomes really hard to separate yourself then. Like when you lose one of your skills, like when you lose one of your elite skills and it becomes maybe above average, or an above average skill becomes average, it just makes you a good player. It's hard to be, I think with the young talent, the distance that these guys are hitting it, how ready they are. I think golf's just, you know, by virtue of technology, training, coaching, golf's never been more simple. And so we're seeing it with Ludvig, who's one of my stock ups. Like, you can come out on tour at age 22, never having seen the courses, and compete. That used to not be the way the tour worked. It used to be, hey, I've been around this place 7 times. I have an inherent advantage. That advantage isn't the same. You know, I'll never forget what Jeff Ogilvy on this podcast said about TrackMan. It's like, you know, having a career that spanned across before and after TrackMan, you know, he used to say everybody used to walk around on the range and talk about how they thought they found it. After TrackMan, everybody walks around the range knowing exactly what they need to do. And I think, like, listen, like, the game's gotten simpler. It's not as complex, and these careers are going to be shorter. And the tour's going to be younger for the foreseeable future. So I think Jordan Spieth, when you break out his career, he's probably a five-year superstar. And that is a very great player in the long run. His 5 years just happened to be 21 to 26.
Andy, kind of, it's interesting you mentioned the whole optimization thing. One thing I've been thinking about with Spieth that maybe I just need to dig into a little bit more. I think the game of golf has changed a ton since he came onto the scene. And one of the ways golfers are way smarter about the way they approach golf courses, like you kind of mentioned, they're not hitting into as many penalty hazards. Like, Scotty's being very conscious about taking penalty hazards out of play. Spieth, he hits these loose shots where he's hitting shots into penalty hazards. I think that costs you a lot more in 2024 than it would have in 2017. And I think, these loose swings, like you're saying, he's not an elite ball striker, and that once you lose a major skill like that, the game's kind of, I don't want to say entirely passed Spieth by, but I think the days of him being a consistent week in and week out golfer are gone. I mean, do you think it's likely that over the next 5 years, Jordan Spieth gets back to being somebody who's on, like, one of the top 5 names on the odd sheet?
I think he might pick off a major still.
Right.
But I don't think you should, he's even close to being, like, for me, a top 10 guy in any major. I think the Masters is maybe the one where he rises up, and I could see him in the Open getting around that 10 spot. I think the other thing that has to be mentioned, when you talk about Spieth, this policy board and all the stuff that's going on in the tour has not been good for anybody on the board outside of Peter Malnati pulling off a fluke win. But, you know, you look at what's going, Cantlay's playing the worst golf of his last 5 years. Jordan Spieth's playing bad golf. Rory has been entangled in this, hasn't played good golf. It's just, I think the off the course stuff is all, it has to be mentioned, because all these guys are just playing bad golf. Like, you know, Webb Simpson wants off the policy board. He's playing the worst golf of his career. That could be age. That could be a lot of things, but I think these guys need to understand they got to get something done. They got to get this distraction out, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's hurting their careers.
Yeah. Do you want to get to your stock up?
Yeah. I got Wyndham Clark as one. I think, like, this time last year, he was playing an opposite field event. And I think last year he wins the U.S. Open. And he won Wells Fargo. That was kind of his big win, which is this week, that kind of set this all up. And after the U.S. Open, the question was, like, what is he? What is he going to be? Is he going to be a fluke major winner, or is he going to be is it going to be like, this was the start of something? And early signs this year is this was the start of something. He has become a world-class golfer. And I think the thing that I'm impressed with is just the variety. He has a lot of gas. I mean, he is long. Like, you don't go watch golf where you marvel at somebody else hitting a driver when they're playing with Rory McIlroy. Wyndham Clark has the ability to hit it with the longest players in the game. And he's a really good putter when, you know, it gets going like it. So anyways, but the thing I'm like most impressed with is the variety of courses that he's winning at. He won Pebble, which was range shortened. That's an iron test, right? That is not a golf course that is like just like very favorable to bombers. Now it was soft. It probably helped out a little bit. He comes in second at API, which you would expect. Narrow fairways, thick rough is going to be very friendly to power hitters. But you know, he's been the guy that stepped up and challenged Scheffler. He finished T2 at the Players. That is not a golf course you'd expect Wyndham Clark to play well at. Big misses are penalized heavily there. And he finishes T3 at Harbortown, another golf course that, you know, like these are like you, those weeks, if you put him at a golf course that really played into his skill set, those weeks are probably wins, you know? He's playing a lot of variety in the golf courses really well. And I think like he's been super impressive. Obviously, the miscut of the Masters was a bit of a bummer, but I think this guy's blossomed into one of the best players in the world. And it's been one of the fun things to watch. I think like watching a guy put everything together. I mean, he's right around the same age as Spieth, and it's one of the beautiful things about the game of golf is like you never know what age you're going to play your best golf at. You're just constantly working and everything comes together at different times. And where Spieth was this young talent and everything, we just talked about him, Wyndham Clark's like your traditional golf late bloomer who's put together all of his game at a little bit later age than we're used to in this young youth driven era. And I'm curious to see how long it goes. Like, could he have five really good years, or is he going to be 3 years? Is it going to be three really good Wyndham years? You know, but I can't think of a player outside of Scottie Scheffler that's boosted their stock in my eyes more than Wyndham Clark.
I think the most fun thing for me about watching Wyndham Clark, on top of him playing a fun style where he's really scrappy, he seems to want to win about as much as anybody out there. And I feel like there's so many golfers.
Super competitive.
Yeah, there's so many golfers in the modern era that seem to take the approach of, you know, you can only control what you can control, and finishing tied for sixth, you know, we'll get him next week. Wyndham takes a different approach. He really cares. It eats him alive. I followed him at Riviera and he was right on the cut line, ended up missing the cut. Every putt that he missed, he was pissed off. And seeing that kind of passion, I think it's increasingly rare from top golfers in the world. So I just think he's a fun golfer to watch. Andy, are you firmly, you think Wyndham Clark 2 years from now, are we talking about him as a top player? I'm not sure I'm there.
I think that's what's, we're a year in to him being, I mean, outside of Scottie, has anybody impressed you more over the last, you know, rolling calendar year?
Ludvig, who you kind of mentioned, I think that's another one of your winners. I think Ludvig has impressed me as much as Wyndham Clark.
Yeah. So like those two are like, to me, like right behind Scottie. I think like the best way is like, you know, it's a major championship. You're picking your guys like, hey, you know, we're teeing it up wherever. Where do they fall? They probably fall. I mean, you go Scottie, and then it's, you know, I think they're all in the mix with Rom, Rory, Brooks, which is that. I mean, he was literally played an opposite field event about a year ago.
It's unbelievable.
So yeah, he's up to three in the world, which I don't put a lot of stock in the world rankings, but you know, I think he'd be three, four, or five if all the live guys were in there. He'd be a top five player, which was, you know, that you don't see rises like that very often. And this guy's got all the tools to be there for a while.
Can I give you another guy that's risen quite significantly in the official world golf rankings and just in general the golf world. So this is my other, Scotty was my number one stock up. I think you could go with a lot of other names here, but I think Akshay Bhatia is
I was looking at Akshay as one of these.
You want to talk about a meteoric rise. In 2022, he had 22 starts on the Korn Ferry Tour, missed 13 cuts, was not one of the best golfers in the world by any stretch of the imagination shortly ago. In 2024, he's been great. He has 7 top 20s and 12 starts on the PGA Tour, including some strong fields. Won the Valero Texas Open, was excellent that week, distanced himself from the field significantly, besides Denny McCarthy, who kind of hung with him till the end. Made the cut in his Masters debut. He's up to 33rd in the official world golf rankings, top 20 in the FedEx Cup standings. I mean, Akshay Bhatia is only 22 years old now, obviously turned professional at a really young age. He's kind of he's not a superstar, but he's a legit tour player now, and he's only 22. I think it's reasonable to talk about him as somebody with a very bright future, especially since he's figured out the putting. Since changing to that broomstick, I mean, Akshay's now gone from being an awful putter to being a good putter, and the results have followed. So I think he's somebody to be excited about and has one of the biggest stock movements, so to speak, of this calendar year.
Yeah, and another name that we can relate here, because I think it's just, you know, you talk about the global nature of golf and growing the game, but another player of Indian descent that I had on my list, working list, was Saath Theegala, who's up to 12 in the world. And like, I think at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Saath was contending late in a major, which I think is like, you know, you're talking about, it was a weird year when he was in college, but he was the real deal in college. But it was the COVID year. So he never got to they never played the national championship that would have been his big coming out party. And I think people obscure that. But with Akshay, I think like what I've always believed with players that turn pro at a really young age, and I think this is true with Joaquin Niemann, they turn pro at a super young age and you forget how young they are because they've been around for a long time. And it's like, well, you know, like people are going crazy about what, some players do. And it's like, well, you know, Joaquin Niemann's actually younger than him, you know, and he's done a lot. And I think that's where we're going to be with Akshay in, you know, 3 years. He should be a senior in college and look at what he's accomplished already in the professional game. And like, it's, you know, listen, like everybody's going Ludwig crazy, and I'm fully on board with Ludwig. Ludwig's like 24. Akshay's 2 years younger than Ludwig, and age matters. Like when you discuss all this stuff, like he's still got 2 years of development that he's behind Ludwig. Like it's not, you know, I don't think he will get there. I think Ludwig's very, very special. But like, it's not unfathomable that in 2 years, Akshay has more accomplishments than Ludwig, right? Like that's not out of the realm of possibilities. And I think that age is just such a weird thing with golf, because it's like, you know, it's what we're talking about. Like Wyndham's putting it all together at 29, you know, Ludwig has come out with everything together. And now the question is, how far will it go? With Akshay, it's like, okay, this guy's really good at 22. What is he going to be at 25? Is that putter going to keep getting better? I imagine, like, it seems to me like the broomstick putters, they get better and better with it the longer they do it. I mean, like, you think about it, it's a completely different way to putt a ball. And like, you're relearning how to putt effectively. And I think like that's just something with this like unconventional putter craze that the tour is going through, where you see all different styles of putters, and especially the long putters. It's like, how good are these guys with long putters 5 years in? Because it's a new form of putting. You have to be getting better. I imagine the touch on long putts is going to get better. The accuracy on those 10 to 15 footers, like just getting set up to the ball, you're going to improve. Like, I think that's something to watch with these long putters, is charting where these guys get to 5 years into it. And like, you know, making the switch, you know, you get a bump right off the bat, but where can, are, do, do we get to a point where a lot of the best putters in the world are long putters?
It's not out of the realm of possibilities, unfortunately. I don't love the aesthetic, but it's possible. I mean, he's gained strokes putting five straight events. Like, Akshay's actually a pretty good putter now. And Andy, when you're talking about the age thing and how we think of different golfers, one question that I had for you in the bank here, this, I already went through my two losers in Spieth and Rahm, but I had one honorable mention here that you can infer who I'm going for here. Somebody that's about the same age as Akshay, would you take the future of Tom Kim or Akshay Bhatia?
Akshay, without a doubt.
Me too.
I think this is where, like, I don't know. I think people run with things, and I'm not saying I'm like fading Tom Kim's career, but I think like it's super, you have to be super careful anointing guys. And I think Tom Kim won some soft events just in general. Yeah. I mean, it's impressive to do it at a really young age, but let's see some, and I think like it's where Akshay, it's exciting to see where he's going, but we need to see some stuff in some majors. We need to, you know, but I take Akshay like 10 times out of 10. And I could be wrong. You know, Tom Kim, he's a world-class player. He's still like a very good player. I think the expectations of him being a top five player are a little short-sighted given the makeup of his game and the struggles he's going to have keeping up with some players.
I'm with you. I would also take Akshay. And to be fair, Tom Kim's actually been decent in major championships, but to your point, the wins were soft. It was at Wyndham, two at Shriners. Like, these are not the events that really translate to major championship success. And I think with Akshay, I'm getting major Bubba vibes. I don't think it's just the lefty thing. Like, the way he can shape the ball both directions, he has a lot of shots off the tee. So I think there's some reasons to be pretty bullish on the future of Akshay Bhatia.
Yeah. We've talked about Ludvig a little bit. He's one of my ups. I had Jordan as a down too, so we kind of have some overlap here. But I mean, I think the world's Ludvig's oyster right now. To me, if you were going to compile a list of players that could unseat Scottie Scheffler as the top player in the game right now, he's near the top. How
do
you feel?
He might be number one, right? The single biggest threat to Scottie.
I mean, he's just the golf swings. So simple, so good. The driving is prolific. And I think as he continues to work on that around, I think he just needs a little more polish. I do think like Scottie being arguably the greatest player around the green. So I think you put him with like Cam Smith and, you know, Jordan and
Patrick
some
Reed.
Other player, Patrick Reed around the greens, like, that's the stuff that wins majors more so than I like, you know, getting up and down when you really need it is just such a great skill when the golf gets really hard. So to me, I don't know what Ludvig needs to do to kind of polish that game up. I don't know if it's seeing getting a short game coach in there, but that's the last step he needs.
I'm with you. I mean, I'd say probably John Rahm is the closest to Scottie in terms of unseating him as the top player in the world. But after that, for me, it'd probably be Ludvig or Rory. And honestly, Ludvig's around the green play hasn't been terrible. It's not as consistent. He's nowhere near on the level of Scottie Scheffler. So it'd be interesting to see what he does there. But Ludvig, Andy, PGA Championship, if you're not taking Scottie, who's the name right after that? Like, where is Ludvig for you? It's got to be top five, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's top five. I think it's a mixture of players. Yeah. You know, a lot of them we've touched on here, but you know, like whose game do you like more, Ludvig's or Rahm's? I think they're really similar, actually.
I like Rahm's game more. I don't want to disrespect Rahm. I mean, anytime he doesn't look like he's necessarily the best player in the world, he kind of offers a reminder that he's got magical short game and elite driver. I mean, John Rahm's so well-rounded that I think he's still a step ahead of Ludvig.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think like Rahm is clearly still a step above. And I think that's where I would just caution. I think like the expectations for Ludvig are super high because of how he handled the Masters. We're going to see him play his second major in a week. Like second major. So let's see how it goes, but I think like it's hard to have him outside the top 5.
Agree. Did we get through your list? All right.
Yeah, I got through most of it. I do you have any others you want to touch on? I had JT is stocked down. I think that last year it was a really bad year for JT, and this year is a little bit better, but I think that we're at this point where it's like kind of in getting to a similar vein with Spieth of what is he? I just, when I compare him to a player like Ludvig or now even Wyndham Clark, it feels like a pretty good gap between JT and Wyndham Clark as their games are made up. Just watching like the eye test beyond just, you know, I think JT, when it looks good, it's great. But like, this is the thing. He went from being a very long player to he's like pretty middle of the road now with distance. And that's hard. Like his game when he was coming on, when he was this young, new, talented player, like power was like one of the first things that you brought up. Power and then the iron play. And the power, it just isn't there anymore. And I think that explains why he's, you know, just a above average player at this point.
Yeah. Similar vein with Tom Kim, not to put these two in the same sentence necessarily, but you want to talk about soft setups. I mean, Justin Thomas hasn't really done anything in a setup that's difficult in like a year now. I mean, his good finishes are Harbortown, AMX, I mean, Pebble. There's a lot of wedge, driver wedge, right? Fortinet, Travelers last year. I mean, major championships, he was really bad, and he was bad at the Masters this year. Like, this is, we're pretty far removed from seeing Justin Thomas display dominance off the tee and good long iron play. So I'm not super bullish on him.
I mean, if you take, and if you can't do this, it's not fair to do this. I mean, he won the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. But if you look past the PGA Championship and you go back to 2021, he's got one, outside of that PGA Championship, he's got one top 10 in 13 starts in majors.
It's fair. I think it's kind of fair to do that. 13 isn't insignificant.
Yeah. Now in that same stretch, 2021, he does have a players too. So I want to be fair to that. But I think like he's never been I guess like the what I think about with the world's best players, I think what I marvel at is the consistency. And he's never been truly a consistent player. Like where week in, week out, he's on the board. And I think like that consistency is just getting like he's becoming more and more inconsistent as he ages.
Yeah, I think 2017, 2018, he was fairly consistent, but it's been a long time at least since week in and week out he's been putting up top 10.
It's 2024.
Oh yeah, yeah. Not to throw a complete curveball, Andy, but we're talking about Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. They kind of seem probably like they're going to be running Team USA Ryder Cup. I mean, isn't that kind of, at this point, like, shouldn't we be talking about that more as like a Scottie Scheffler? I mean, he hasn't been amazing, but would you feel super comfortable with Team USA's fate in the hands of Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas?
I think they should be probably more established people that, you know, are going to be qualifiers. You know, I don't think the people running the team should be captain's picks. And I think last year they were both captain's picks. And it seems to me that if you just kind of take a scan through the American world rankings and, you know, they both seem to be heading towards needing captain picks again. So do you think that is who should be, you know, the vocal, you know, people running the team?
Right. If you fast forward 15 years, it almost feels like a certainty that they'll be involved in as vice captains or potentially captains 15, 20 years down the line. I think it'll be reasonable to look back on that and wonder if they're the best selections.
Yeah. All right. Let's, that does it for stock up, stock down. Let us know if who we missed, who you'd put in there. But let's get to recommendations. What's your recommendation?
This one's maybe a little out there, but hopefully practical, Andy. So we were trying to, I was with a group of friends recently trying to watch, decide what movie to watch. And somebody suggested giving ChatGPT, the AI tool, artificial intelligence chat-based tool, just giving it some movies you like and having it recommend you 5 or 6 movies back. And it was a wonderful experience. It gave phenomenal recommendations that we all agreed on quickly, reached a consensus. So of all the pie in the sky potential use cases for AI, this is a practical one. And I would recommend it. If you're struggling to figure out a movie or a show, throw some movies and shows that you like into the prompt and have it recommend you stuff back. It was excellent.
That's a great, great idea. I've been, the missus and I have been on like a 90s movies kick, and we've just been looking up movies that we watched, you know, 20 years ago, or movies that we never watched as, you know, high schoolers or, you know, whatever it may be. And we've been like, it's been great. I mean, the movies have been amazing. We watched, Talented Mr. Ripley, which I hadn't seen in years, because I think this all started because there's that new show Ripley, and it was great. So now we've just like carried it on. We just watched Dazed and Confused again. It's been a long time, but I think like I like that idea. I'm gonna try it out actually, because we, you know, we're trying to find more 90s movies to watch. But my recommendation, it'll be more like health and wellness. I got this tip about like kind of transitioning from work back into the house. And I think it's like actually extremely easy, achievable, and it works. Everybody talks about meditation. I think meditating's hard. I want to get into it, but it is just a difficult, I don't know. It's the simplest thing. Oftentimes the simplest things in the world. Somebody explained to me once, studying is just sitting in a chair and reading. When you think about it that way, it's super, super easy. Meditation, sitting in a chair and breathing. But somebody gave me a tip of just when you transition from, say, work or something to going back into the house. And I think this is, applies to a lot of people that work in the house now. I've been doing just 5 deep breaths before going transitioning, and it really resets me. It's done wonders for me being able to detach myself and be present when I move from one space to the one part of life to another part of life. And it's super easy. It takes 30 seconds, you know, 5 deep breaths, breathe in through your nose, breathe out through your mouth. And it like, I've been shocked at how big of a difference it makes when you try and move. And what I've noticed is like I've started to use it in more situations, like when I'm, you know, just trying to get ready to go do something. It's amazing. It's really amazing what just good deep breathing can do for you.
A lot of elite athletes focus on that. A lot of breathing exercises in big moments. So I'm it's not something I do, but maybe I'll try it out this week.
I mean, try it, honestly, like just 5 deep breaths. It's so achievable. It's extraordinarily easy. It takes very little time, and I think it makes a lot of difference. So that's my recommendation. All right. Today's podcast, Matt Ruchus is on a trip. He said, he was just listening to Wyndham Clark talk at U.S. Open Media Day. Him and Garrett are out there in the Sandhills of North Carolina. So Meg Atkins is editing this podcast. Thank you, Meg, for pinch hitting here. As a quick reminder, we have a delightful membership offering. You contribute on Tour Guide every week. Garrett's got this great column called Design Notebook. I jumped in, did a big article on Band in Dunes for Monday, and kind of the next 25 years and kind of some of the pressing questions about that. Club TFE is $120 for the year. It is we're putting out three to four articles a week in it. I think that it's a really strong content offering, but also then we've been doing a lot of member events. We just announced a trip to Scotland in there. We have more kind of like member centric stuff coming down the line. We're really kind of focusing on, you know, giving our membership opportunities to do some cool stuff. So if you're interested in joining a community of people that are absolutely crazy about golf, that love exploring the game, the different intricacies, this community is for you. It's $120 a month. We're putting out a lot of content there, but then we're also building out this community aspect of it. So we'd love to have you in Club DFE. It is it's a very rigorous membership application form. I'm just joking. But we'd love to see you over there. Thank you to everybody for listening, supporting the podcast and the company. And we will be back Thursday. I believe Garrett's going to have a interview. It could be with someone very involved with the new course at Pinehurst. But I'm not gonna jinx it. So if not, you might hear from me again if the interview doesn't happen, but I think it's gonna happen. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Major championship next week. So we'll have five things on Sunday also. So that'll be out Sunday. I gotta line up a guest for that. I gotta actually grind down, get that interview set up. So all right, Joseph, big thanks for coming on. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Andy.